Questions are all around us.
Learn.
Why is liquid cold?
Learn.
What is maths?
Learn.
Why does this, hurt?
Learn.
What is the Enlightenment?
I don't know.
And now, thanks to the University of Auckland, it's time to ready, steady, learn!
It certainly is. And this morning we've got Associate Professor Erin Griffey in the studio. Kia ora, how are you?
Hi, good morning.
Thank you for coming in this morning. So you're part of the Art History Department. Do you want to give us a little introduction into what your research is about?
Okay, well, I work on early modern visual and material culture, so Renaissance and Baroque art, but not just paintings, but also the decorative arts, jewelry, clothing, interior decoration, the whole panoply of display in olden times.
It's so fascinating. We were just talking about this before we came on, that's kind of, it's sort of everywhere when you start looking for it. It's in the art world very explicitly, but also it's in so much popular culture. It's in a lot of television at the moment. When you watch a TV show, do you find yourself going, that's not period appropriate. That's not, no, they didn't wear, you know, ruffles like that.
I can't read historical fiction and you have to shut me up watching, you know, historicized movies. Yes. I always find things that are historically inaccurate, yes.
Oh, that's actually 200 years too early for that one there, I think you'll find. How did you get into this field of research?
Oh, I don't know. I think something was just lit in me mm-hmm. when I started studying art history in high school. And I'm sure it partly comes down to having really good teachers, but I've just always been interested in, fascinated by stuff.
Yeah.
So anything that's visual, but also sensory and material. And I'm a very, you know, curious person and I'm interested in history. So it was a perfect way of matching all of my interests.
Absolutely. And, you know, I find it really fascinating, especially like the sort of, as you're saying, the craft work and the costume, sort of jewelry, all of that kind of thing tells you a lot about a people as well. Do you find you sort of surprised when you're doing this research to discover things you didn't necessarily know about, you know, people we sort of like know a lot about otherwise in sort of the early modern period? Does fashion, does art, does jewelry sort of explain things that we can't see otherwise?
I think it absolutely explains things you don't see otherwise. I think, too, it's a way of tapping in at a very primal level. When you're reading about people's, I don't know, when you're reading about the clothing that they've ordered or the jewelry that they've ordered, or you're reading about them giving a Valentine to someone, a present they're sending. Mm. Say they're sending, for example, one of the queens I work on, Henrietta Maria, she sends basically a treasure trove of presents to her sister-in-law when she's going through a really tough time. And that's the kind of thing I think we can really tap into.
Because it's very human.
It's very human. And at the moment, I'm starting to do some work on homesickness. And I'm really interested in what things really reverberated for these women, these queens typically who were far from home. What did they need from home? And what they seemed to have longed for was music from home.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted bread from home.
Bread.
Like Vogels. You know what I mean? It's like Kiwis in London.
Yeah, yeah.
And they wanted wine from home.
Yeah.
And they wanted home clothes tailored in the style from home. And this is something I really want to develop because to me, again, it suggests something that's just really deep rooted in us. And again, like you said, these are resonances we can really tap into today.
Absolutely. And I think also, especially with that sort of early modern period, you lose a lot of the humanizing quality of those people, especially
right.
when they're really large historical figures
right,
or
right.
a queen or a
yes.
king. You know, they sort of become more than themselves and then less than themselves at the same time. They don't become a person necessarily. So to see things like that, like they were homesick and they yeah. wished they had a piece of toast from,
yes.
you know, the kitchen at their parents'
yes.
house or something
yes.
like that. It makes it really relatable. It makes it really human as well.
It really does, yes.
There's a lot of sort of moving around of people's especially young women in that sort of royal sphere.
Yes.
What can you tell us about that? Like, how were young women being, you know, moved between royal sort of courts?
Right. So, you know, a really valuable marriage market, and princesses were the pawns in this political strategy.
Mm.
And so they typically were married around the age of 15.
Wow.
And they went to their, you know, their marital court. Typically, in many cases, they did not meet their husband until they moved to their marital court, and then they would meet him. They might have seen a picture of him, perhaps a little flattering, and then only met him. And typically, they never returned home.
Mm. No wonder they were homesick. They're just kids, basically, aren't they? You know.
And so they would bring this vast entourage of servants from their homeland. But the convention was that within about a year, all of these servants would then have to go back home. And then they would be left, you know, with just people from their husband's court. And you can imagine they struggled with the language. They struggled with religion. They struggled with, you know, just having different approaches to social life at the time. It could be very awkward and very, very distressing for
these
young women.
Totally isolating as well, you know.
Yeah.
Especially because there'd be language barriers. There'd be all sorts of things like going on at the time as well. And as you were saying, these kind of incredible artifacts like the letters and I guess diaries. Did people keep diaries in that time? Is that a thing?
You do find occasional diaries, but but we find a huge number of letters. And for me, my big push with my research is letting myself engage with primary sources. And of course, artworks are primary sources.
Absolutely.
So this is what the art historian does. But I also pay a lot of attention to letters and inventories and accounts, because again, I feel like I'm really down in the mine with their voices, engaging with them directly rather than engaging with what secondary sources have said about them.
Absolutely, because again, it gets back to that kind of the humanizing thing as well.
Right.
This is the person writing the letter. Yeah,
yes,
totally.
Yes.
A painting or a piece of art can tell you so much about a historical period of time or a person. What always sort of, is there something that strikes you first from an image when you're looking at a historical painting, for example? Is there something that you're always drawn to first, or does it totally depend on what you're looking at?
Oh, I think that's a really nice question. I think for me, looking at an artwork, in the first instant, I'm looking to be kind of ravished by it visually.
Yeah.
Is it a visually stunning image?
Mm-hmm.
And I work a lot on portraits, so I look really closely at faces, and I'm really interested in dress and jewelry, and I'm really interested in brushwork. So I tend to start far, and then I get up close, and I'll look at the details, and I'll investigate things.
Yeah. It's fantastic. So you're speaking as part of the Raising the Bar series. We've had quite a few academics coming up through Ready, Steady, Learn to talk about it.
Great.
Your talk sold out, which is really exciting.
Yes,
so
exciting.
Already out the door. But people can jump on the University of Auckland's website if they want to find out more about other Raising the Bar events. Are you looking forward to that?
I am looking forward to that. So I'll be speaking about beauty at the early modern court. I'm focusing on the Tudors and the Stuarts, and I'm going to talk about their beauty rituals and what they wore and why, ideals of beauty. So, and in fact, if I can make it happen, I may even do a little recreation of a couple of the recipes on the night.
Awesome. Some of the things that they used, as they're like powders or things?
Well,
or?
You need to come to the talk.
Come to the talk.
Because they did,
you
know, they did cleansers, they did masks, what we would call masks, like almost like sheet masks, but with linen. They did, you know, like we do... you know, like waters, like toners.
Mm-hmm.
They did toners. They did night creams. They did pimple treatments. They did freckle removal. They did sunburn treatment. You name it.
The Instagram influences of the Stuart and Tudor courts. There we go.
That's right.
No, it's going to be such an interesting talk. Thank you so much for coming up this morning and speaking to us.
Thank you very much.
That was Ready, Steady, Learn. Thanks to the University of Auckland, the best university.
And we're